Have they found the tomb of Cleopatra, Alexander the Great, the Ark of the Covenant? I'll stick around and find out more with Dr. Carmen Bolter when we come back and take your calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Carmen Bolter with us. Our website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We'll also take your calls this hour. Carmen, would you say in your career that this discovery may be one of the most exciting ones that you've heard about?
Absolutely. It's mind-boggling.
Yeah, it is.
And I was thinking about the question that you asked before, like, why didn't it go public? But the thing is, if people haven't heard something before, they tend to reject it. And, you know, we're so conditioned to just have things repeated and repeated, and then to repeat things that we see on the news, and things are quite controlled. So it's really a psychological construct in itself. That, I mean, there couldn't be anything bigger than this. I mean, the discoverer himself told me that it's 1,000 times bigger than King Tut.
It's huge. It's huge. And so
when you think about why not just go in there and, you know, have the cameras ready and all that, okay. But then what, once it's open? You know, with 14 National Guards, I mean, who's going to protect that? And you know, it's a game changer. The tagline for the foundation is, you know, ushering an era of peace and prosperity to the Middle East. Well, you know, we know there's forces against that. So this could change all of humanity, you know, in terms of really understanding the distant past and all of that. But from everything I've done in my career, there seems to be everything operating against that.
I think Cleopatra's tomb and Alexander the Great's, that's a great discovery, but I'm excited about the Ark of the Covenant. I mean, to me, that echoes the Bible. When you hear things and read things in the Bible, and then you're able to verify it scientifically or in any other way, that authenticates the Bible stories. It's an amazing, amazing thing.
And for me, it's the material from the Library of Alexandria.
Yeah, that's great,
now,
too.
Think about the teams that would be necessary to go in there. It could be 20 years of research easily. Okay, so there's going to be DNA testing. There's going to be dating. First of all, cataloging of everything. And then, you know, the idea of 3D replicas of various artifacts and scrolls, computational linguistics, teams of linguists that can translate the information that's in there. But again, you know, there's corruption in the dating labs. There's few people who understand how to use computational linguistics. That happens to be what my PhD is in, you know, and would the people who did the translation have it right? Or so you'd have to have it double blind.
It'd have to be double, at least.
Researching the team, pardon me?
It'd have to be at least double, checked and rechecked by different sources.
Right, and then they even suggested the idea of an oracle department. And so what kind, you know, how many channels are actually coming up with things about it? And, you know, who was Alexander the Great that he, you know, in another life that he ended up being there? And, you know, those sorts of things are really interesting to me. And so it's strategically moving forward, but I'll tell you this, I heard about it 3 years ago.
Well, that's you're in the know, though.
But not anything about it or where or anything, just one person who knows a lot of stuff, who keeps his mouth shut about a lot of things, said they found the tomb of Alexander the Great, you know. And I know because he keeps my secrets, not to pry him open.
Right.
Right. And I'm like, well, what do you mean? And I had the same kind of reaction. Like, how do you know? What do you mean? Like, where's the verifiability?
Tell me more.
But you can't. You can't with somebody like that. And so then when it came up again, you know, and they approached me, you know, because I do have experience with a lot of these things, not to be doing it all, but to certainly supervising teams and whatnot. And they already knew about my work, but the real link is geoscans, the high definition satellite. You know how they find things that are deep under the earth that can go as deep as 6 miles, no kilometers.
That's still dramatic. That is still dramatic.
And it has always been accurate.
Now, are there...
There wasn't as much verifiability with it because they hadn't gone and dug to the places that they did these scans. The other thing is everybody's suffering from non-disclosure agreements. So even the person who helped, there was a pair of people who, scientists, who discovered, developed the logarithms for the scan. So there's a different logarithm on a live high-definition satellite scan. There's one for water, one for pottery, one for gold, precious metals, precious jewels, right? And so they just run the scan with a different formula for each element, right? And so when they were, you know, doing some work with some, you know, anti-gravity and that sort of thing, they fired the guy and made him sign a 20-year non-disclosure agreement, right? And actually, I mean, I feel quite privileged here, A, that they're even talking to me, but when the non-disclosure agreement after 20 years was lifted, I got a phone call. I didn't know who to call.
Are they cringing because you're talking about it in some form or fashion tonight?
No. They've invited me to.
They have. Okay. So they know what's going on.
But the thing is, they also asked me to cancel my schedule, and so I stopped, you know, I said no to interviews, and, you know, then I thought, well, that's kind of fun not to have to do interviews, and, you know, to kind of have my schedule to myself. And then they said, go, talk. But, you see, the discoverer is French, and that's his only language.
Huh, okay.
And, you know, everybody doesn't have, you know, the ability to present just because they discovered something. Not that he does or doesn't, but the point of the matter is that going public with something is different than the discovery. And I'm cringing a little bit because I've been sitting on this since March.
Meeting. No, and that's not like
Paris
you.
Paris was April 2nd to 4th. And I'm like, well, you know, and you know, what's the reaction going to be, and then what? And the thing is moving forward, and humanity deserves to know.
Of course, it's history. It's part of this planet.
And history has been messed up, and we haven't been told the truth. And, you know, research on Atlantis is so obscure, and people, you know, people come to me, they know everything, you know, how know-it-alls get.
Sure.
You know, they know everything about it because they figure something out and somebody did a channeled message and they're in the third, fourth, fifth, sixth dimension, and then, you know, and, you know, they got a flood because they were, you know, doing experiments with animals and humans. Well, what if Atlantis went on for 60,000 years? You know, you can't just take one day out of it and say you know everything about it.
Like, exactly.
We have lost, pardon me?
Especially, they may have had the incredible technology, flying machines, everything.
Yeah, and we've lost our ability to discern. So much of the information and the data has been erased, and we've been told what to think. And so school turns us into repeaters. The teacher has the right answer, the one right answer hypothesis, and we repeat. The news repeats, repeats, repeats. You go to a dinner party, and everybody's repeating something they read or they heard. Well, the people who own the media have a storyline and a narrative that they want us to know. So they lock everything in to, you know, the basket of whatever, UFOs, oh, that's crazy, or whatever. And everybody's got the opinion that someone has is the opinion of what they listen to. So to open your mind to the truth, which you're a person who has been doing that for your whole career, is also tricky.
There seems to be enough gold in this tomb to upgrade the level of the economy of Jordan for the rest of its existence.
Well, or the whole world, if they shared it.
Or the whole world, that's
like,
true.
The intellectual property is super important, but also, you know, like what happened? And who was Alexander, and how did he, you know, they say, you know, he conquered and all that, but he joined with the people, but he was at the front. And all the foot soldiers were behind him, and they followed him because they had a leader. You know, what leader is at the front of the army now?
Yeah, it doesn't happen. They trusted him, they respected him, and he was there.
Okay, how about this? He was a high-level initiate. Okay, so there's this huge 22-foot statue of him on the main level of the pyramid, National Museum. And I take people to the Rosetta Stone, and then I take them to see Alexander the Great, and then we go off and do the rest of the tour. And that's something else I wanted to talk to you about, what's going on in the museum and the King Tut exhibit now. And so he trained in the temples of Isis, and there were temples of Isis all over the Mediterranean basin before it was divided into Muslim on the bottom and Christian on the top in 13 countries. You know, So, you know, he's there in the museum with the wand of Horus, wearing the pharaonic skirt.
He was an icon.
He was an icon, but then when he was a visionary, but he was also, like, he was known to be speaking, you know, or listening and speaking to somebody who wasn't there, and his soldiers and generals kind of giggled about him. But he was channeling, he was communicating, and that's normal to the Egyptians. That's something, that's a skill you develop, and you're communicating with other beings and, you know, or disincarnate entities or whatever. You know, and you and I have had enough airtime to have discussed all these things in other interviews about different subjects. Mm-hmm. So he was a special person. So when he passed at the ripe age of 33, his army generals were just, you know, guys.
How did he die?
They didn't know what to do.
Was he killed or did he just die of some disease or something?
Who's going to know for sure? I'm guessing he just died. I don't think he was killed. But then everybody's like, well, now what? We don't have a leader anymore. So they divided his territory up, and then things deteriorated really quickly because I say he was enlightened in a way.
And somebody hightailed it off with his gold and his body and took it away somewhere.
Well, okay, hightailed it off, or now the discoverer also told me, I mean, you can't believe how interesting these meetings were. I really was so thrilled because after they approached me, these meetings happened 2.5 weeks later. And I'm like, sure, I'll go to Paris and talk to you about that, you know, meet the discoverer and all that.
That's impressive, Carmen, that they would turn to you for this. I think that's pretty remarkable.
Well,
good for you.
Here's another reason, though. French is my first language. I can do all the reporting in French if you need me to. And I've got the computational linguistics and the DNA analysis and the whole logistics for the expedition. And, you know, they approached me and you know, I don't know if this is going to happen. There's no contract in place, but to be expedition manager.
Interesting.
Like, Excuse me. Can you repeat that, please?
If they make this announcement, will they do it in France or would they do it in Jordan?
Well, I'm not at liberty. They asked me not to talk about strategy.
You know more, don't you?
Yeah, but it's also the timing. You know, the green light, the nod has to come from the king, and you know how governments work.
Oh yeah.
I don't think they're particularly hiding anything, or they're anyway. I don't know. I mean, the thing is that. It's not even a new discovery. There was a press conference with Reuters like 5 years ago, and it went flat.
Nobody picked it up.
Well, what's picked up? Like, this is the discussion now, and this I was hoping that we could get into the why isn't this happening? How would it happen? What would happen if it did get announced?
Well, it may happen now since you've been on this program. You know, people will start fishing around for it.
I had a little bit of trepidation, you know, and because like I didn't approach your producers, they approached me, and I'm like, okay, what am I going to talk about? Well, what else is there to talk about? You know, because I pride myself on not talking about the same thing over and over again.
Well, you may have known about this when we were doing our Beyond Belief shows. You must have been biting your lip not to tell me.
No, I only had heard they found it. And I was, you know, and the other thing was I had trepidation about the Nefertiti find and, you know, and so, I mean, this is a little bit of an act of bravery to say anything.
Well, I think it's dramatic that it could be Cleopatra's sarcophagus. That's amazing. But the Ark of the Covenant, that to me is phenomenal if it ends up being that.
I saw the picture. How do you have melted ruby and the gold is still intact? Like, it is a phenomenal machine. And there's something else that I haven't said. When the discoverer went in there in the first place, he goes down the stairs into the thing, and then he felt like he was hit in the head with a 2x4. And it's like, well, what's that? And he looks around. He's by himself. He's got an oxygen mask and, you know, the light and
He's got to be nervous, and his heart's beating like crazy, probably.
Well, because anything you've been looking for 20 years, when you know, and no. And that was kind of like me, you know, when I found some stuff in Egypt that I looked for 10 years, and you know, no. When yes is yes, the no.
It's exciting.
We know what no is, and there's a difference, right?
Yeah, so, sure is.
Oh, no, no.
But he feels like somebody bopped him in his head?
Well,
like an energy burst or something?
Yeah, not burst. A protective energetic wall. And this was one of the, well, wall isn't the word either. This was the topic. I mean, I was writing notes like mad in this meeting.
It's like a force field.
Like a force field. And there has been discussion, and this isn't my topic, quantum physics, how that would have happened. The other thing is that the salt in the salt mine has acted as a preservative of some kind.
Right.
And this wasn't... Okay. The conclusion, I think, that a few of us on the inside circle have come to is that it wasn't supposed to be found.
Ever.
Ever. Well, the people who put it there...
They didn't plan on it.
I don't know that they...
I mean, whenever they built it or created it, it took this long to find it.
Well, and King Tut took a good long time to find, too. But the other thing is that, you know, there's stories about that, and I spent a lot of time in the Valley of the Kings, you know, and living in Luxor, or staying in Luxor by myself, and I met families, one particular family who claimed that, oh, come on, Howard Carter didn't find that. We found it a long time before, and we've been, you know, in the courts for 50 years trying to say that's not his discovery, it's ours. Well, it stands to reason that someone else would have, you know, dropped the stone in the hole, and it went dunk, and they went, there's something down there. But, you know, opening the thing and dealing with the artifacts and photographing it is a whole other story. And, you know, we understand how the world works.
Let's take some calls for you. You ready for some calls?
Mm-hmm.
Let's take a few now, and we'll hit the break. And then I want to talk about the King Tut exhibit in Egypt. And then we'll take final phone calls. But first-time caller, Phil, Cleveland, Ohio. Hi, Philip. Go ahead. Is he still with us?
This is Bill.
Oh, Bill. Okay. Yes. It looks like it says Phil, but you are Bill.
Phil, fair enough. I get that a lot.
Okay. Welcome to the show. Go ahead. You're on with Carmen.
Excellent. I just wanted to ask, she said something about two Ark of the Covenants and if that was based on anything. And the other thing was, I thought it was just Levites were the ones that could handle the Ark of the Covenant.
Go ahead, Carmen.
I'm not saying that there are two or three. I was following what George had said, that it could have been in the Dome of the Rock, it could have been in Ethiopia, and there is something there that resembles an ark. Okay, so do we say there's only one and it moved around and that there isn't one in Ethiopia? We can't verify that. So I'm suggesting, like I said, toaster technology. There's a technology that we've replicated over and over. I don't have a problem if this technology was really developed with the possibility that there was more than one. That's just what my brain has needed to do to wrap myself around that, because I don't want to say it's not in Ethiopia. I don't want to say it's the only one. We don't know yet. So, and the Levites were the only ones that could handle it. That's the story. It could be, but I think that they all had a certain charge, and they could have lost their charge, and then it's not as active as it used to be. But just because there's been this discovery doesn't mean that I can tell you the ins and outs of Ark of the Covenant technology.
We're going to come back in a moment with Carmen Bolter. We'll talk about the King Tut exhibit and take final phone calls here on Coast to Coast AM. In the next hour, we begin our Christmassy discussion of miracles and angels as we continue with that theme. And Carmen's website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We will be back in a moment. And welcome back. Our final segment with Dr. Carmen Bolter as we talk about this incredible discovery in Jordan. And Carmen, before we take final calls, let's talk about the moving of the King Tut exhibit in Egypt. Is it in a new museum now or going to one?
Well, this is the issue. So the new museum is nowhere close to finished. I've driven past it, taken photographs. I've been going to Egypt twice a year. And so they say that they're moving it there, and that there's been articles in newspapers in Norway, for example, saying that it's free to the public till last February, and that you can see just the King Tut thing, and there's articles all over. Now, when they were saying they were building a new Library of Alexandria, they said online and in newspapers that it was ready, and then I'd go to Alexandria, and no, they hadn't even dug a hole in the ground, and the distance between when they said it would open and it did open was 12 years. So this time, I'm not falling for it. So whenever something happens like that, I get all kinds of emails from people saying, oh, well, now they've moved the King Tut exhibit. Okay. Now, having gone into the National Museum for the first time in 77 and studied with Hakim, who's the indigenous wisdom keeper in the Pyramid Code, for 10 years, we went over every inch of the museum in two-hour segments over the years. And there's a dedication of the king. There's two full L-shaped wings of King Tut upstairs in the National Museum and a separate room that was just for his chariots. Lots and lots of cases lining these rooms, artifacts in the middle, two separate jewelry rooms. I am telling you that over the last several trips, the thing is being emptied out with cases ripped right off the wall. And I've got photographs of this because they finally allow you to take pictures in there with your cell phone on a camera pass. And the last time I was in there in October, a whole wing is empty. The whole chariot room's empty. And there's all these packages covered up with plastic and whatnot and crates tucked away behind things. And they say they're moving it to the new museum. Then there was an article that said, oh, I'm so sad there was a fire at the new museum. Well, first of all, what fire? A. B, you couldn't possibly drive a truck in there because it's all mud. And so if they say that the artifacts that were already moved to the new museum burned in a fire, then what do you think they're doing with them if they're gone?
So somebody's taking them?
Yes.
And selling them or what?
Well, one of the boxes, the crate said Roma on it. What, you're sending that one to Rome?
To the Vatican?
Who knows? Anyway, so it's extremely upsetting because this is all gold, too. It's the last intact tomb found November 4th, 1922, almost 100 years ago. And any time anybody sees the King Tut exhibit in other cities other than Cairo, it's a replica, a good replica, but not the real thing.
So when we hear about the King Tut exhibit is traveling around the world, going to different places, that's a replica?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
And I went in there and I went, wait, this doesn't feel quite right. And then I found out the whole thing's a replica. Excellent replica, but the energy's not there. Anyway, so this is what they're doing, and they're lying. And I have to deal, like, I bring groups twice a year to Egypt, and people are like, well, I read this article, and they said, and I'm like, well, we have to have something that's verifiable. We drive right past the museum. The cranes are there.
Crazy.
There's no sign of fire. But they're emptying out the King Tut stuff, and there was a lot of stuff in there.
When Zahi Hawass was running the show, were things better or worse?
Well, if you ask somebody if Zahi's gone, some people will say he's gone. Some people will say he never left, and other people will say he's got his kids, his children, his boys, doing his work still. So in some strange way, he still has his hands on the keys to special, you know, chambers here and there.
Just taking a back seat to it.
Pardon me?
He's taking a back seat, I guess.
Yeah, but he's still got the keys, and he charges $500 for 10 minutes of each participant in his group. And he's making a lot of money by being the only person that has access to the keys, because so is he running it, or he's not running it, or he's running it behind the scenes, or, you know, it's hard to know, but I say he's not gone.
So, but are you saying tonight that you think somebody is stealing King Tut artifacts?
Well, not one by one out of the museum because of all the security, but I think that there's some organized something or other that is moving that stuff out of there. And I can show you the progress of pictures that I took for the Pyramid Code that I had a $5,000 permit to take, and stuff that I took when nobody had camera passes in 1977, and every 6 months for the last 3 years.
Let's take the final calls. West of the Rockies, Christian's with us in San Pedro, California. Hi, Christian. Go ahead, sir.
Hello, George. Hello, doctor.
Hello.
I had a question, but I wanted to comment on you. Last night, Craig had a guest on, or George had a guest on his show last night, Craig Hewlett, and mm-hmm. Craig also mentioned that everything you see, hear, and read when it comes to information, is controlled by six corporations. So it's no surprise that the truth does not come out. I wanted to comment, though, Alexander was no tenderfoot. He led his men from the front. When you look at his, you know, the Battle of the Granicus, the Battle of Issus, the famous Siege of Tyr, which was up near, I think, near Tel Aviv in Israel.
He was right there.
The Battle of Gagamela. But the question I have, Doctor, is that in the Hollywood film Cleopatra, there is a scene in the film where Elizabeth Taylor and also Rex Harrison, who plays Caesar, is apparently she takes Caesar to Alexander the Great's tomb in the film. And in the film, Alexander's tomb is all crystal. And I had someone who told me quite a while ago, several years ago, that Alexander the Great's tomb, as described in ancient writings, was absolutely spectacular in all hand-carved of crystal, but yet Hollywood doesn't really follow history accurately. So I'll take my answer on the air. And if I wanted to follow up with the rest of your developments, do I go and just check your webpage online, ma'am? And good luck.
Yes, and I have developed a Patreon page, and I will be putting statements up there for my Patreons. So, okay, thank you.
What and Carmen, so what about the crystallized tomb of Alexander?
Okay, so we know about Hollywood. We know about six corporations. Crystal, crystalline. Salt is crystalline. It's my first thought. There's no way they... Well, I mean, it's just so big. If there's 32 rooms on one level and 12 on another, you know, and then a third level. And if it's hidden, I think the crystal may be referring to salt.
That could be. That could be.
And I think that anybody doing the movie way back then would not have known about this discovery.
What do you think is more dramatic, the discovery that it could be Cleopatra's tomb or Alexander the Great's tomb?
Well, the fact
they're both big, of course.
The fact that they're together.
Yeah.
I mean, this is showing a big organizational thing. And the discoverer told me that the tomb was probably open for about 300 years.
Why no Mark Anthony? What happened to him?
Well, I want to know that, too. And the thing is, maybe one of these gold sarcophagi was him. I mean, we've got to do DNA testing.
Right.
And see... I mean, there's way more questions than there are answers at the moment, but it's pretty exciting to think that there's clues.
These gold statues that you said are life-size, are they plated, or do you think they're all gold, 100%?
They're solid.
Oh, my God.
And there's Isis figures, there's caryatids that are like the female figures that hold up the part of the Parthenon. These, and there's a lot of feminine stuff in there, you know, me and the matriarchal, and life-size horses and chariots and Alexander himself. It's stunning.
I bet. Dave in New Jersey. Hi, David. Go ahead, sir.
Yes, doctor. I have a confession to make to you, to George, and the entire Coast audience. I had sex with Cleopatra.
You did? Well, I hope you enjoyed it. Good for you. I sure hope he didn't play around in the sarcophagus, though.
He's in there too. No, that doesn't work.
Only on this show. Richard in Santa Monica. Hey, Richard. I hope you don't top that.
I'm still laughing. Love your show, George.
Thanks.
So you found Cleopatra's, Alexander the Great, and the Ark of the Covenant in one room, one area?
One big tomb.
One big tomb. And I suppose it's speculation, but I'm telling you, this discoverer has lots and lots of research, and he was in there, and... That's what he thinks, and it makes sense listening to him, and this is the best we've got until we get in there and we can verify some of it.
I would love to know more about the technology. You talk about the Ark of the Covenant. That is fascinating. But what about the Oak Island show that talk about the Ark of the Covenant being there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's quite fascinating. And I would think there's other artifacts buried there. And then mariners talk. And then if something like that was brought over there by the Templars, other people would fall in their wake because it's like a, you know, holy place. But, Doctor, I was wondering, could you speculate on the Ark being at Oak Island?
Oak Island in Nova Scotia, Carmen. I had a guest on a few weeks ago who talked about the possibility that the Knights Templar may have taken it and dropped it into this massive pit and covered it up, you know, to hide it for the rest of time. But there again, another story of where the Ark could be. So, I mean, it pops up all over the planet.
Well, exactly, and people want to know. And I think what this speaks to is our curiosity, and people can conjure up stories. And, again, until we can verify something, it's a story.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, with DNA testing, how could they determine who someone may be? Don't they need original DNA in order to compare it? I don't know how that works.
Well, mitochondrial DNA goes through the matrilineal line, and one of the things in patriarchal dynastic Egypt was that the next pharaoh had to marry the daughter of the pharaoh before him to keep everything going down the mtDNA line. And so, but the simplest thing, if they are Ptolemies and only one of them was a half-brother to Alexander, and the one with the dagger was Alexander, obviously a more grandiose sarcophagus and burial, are they different? Is anybody related?
Mm-hmm.
And so what do we have? I mean, what do we have? If that's the only thing, is that they're all different and no one's related except the half-brother, then we have some information that they could easily have been the Ptolemies.
What does this tell
because
you?
In any other dynasty, they have to be blood-related. Go ahead.
What does this tell you about history if these discoveries prove to be true? About the knowledge of history that has been passed on that we've been able to keep, and then all of a sudden we verify it thousands of years later. It's amazing.
Well, history is when the soldiers came, his story, and there's been a lot of fighting and a lot of stealing and a lot of stick 'em up, give us your stuff. So I think, and then the story's written by the victors, and it's all war. And I've said it to you before, I think we're going to come to see the last 5,000 years as the patriarchal hiccup. Everything else was more peaceable. We can't possibly conceive that the Earth existed for many millennia in peace because everybody thinks that, you know, there's always been war and that's the condition, and they just conditioned us to accept that, and I do not accept it. So history is a mess, but I think the truth is waiting for us.
Is this region under heavy guard and security?
Yes, there's 14 National Guards, but they're not close to the tomb. They're down the road, and the place has been, you know, camouflaged. And, yes, it's heavily guarded, no question.
With that amount of gold in there, you would think Fort Knox soldiers would be out there. You know, who knows?
Well, and who knows what's going to happen now that the cat's out of the bag.
Well, that's a good point.
Hopefully it'll be interesting, and the thing is that this is not new. As I told you, I heard about it 3 years ago. And there's, you know, the routers thing happened 5 years ago at least, and the discovery happened before that. So maybe this will push things along that will, you know, force the issue of, come on, let's see, and hopefully we have the capacity to protect it.
Quick question from Dylan in North Carolina. Go ahead, Dill. We'll squeeze you in here.
Yes, great show. I wanted to ask about Ron Wyatt's discovery that he made back all the way back in 1981. He says that he had an archaeological dig there in Jerusalem in the Old City,
mm-hmm.
and he actually found the area where they had done the crucifixion, the Romans did. And they found a tunnel and excavated and found the Ark of the Covenant. And the most amazing thing about the story is that he found blood on it. And he took the blood to a lab in Israel to have it tested. And it should have been, you know, dead. It was, you know, like hundreds of years, thousands of years old. But when they reconstituted it with saline solution, it was still alive.
Absolutely incredible.
Which is
story.
Remarkable.
Then he got like attacked and like people tried to discredit him and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he was an explorer. He's the one who also claims that he found Noah's Ark up there on Mount Ararat. Ron Wyatt, no longer with us anymore, Carmen, as we wrap this up. But he claims that he did find the Ark of the Covenant. And here's again another story of where it could be. Carmen, would you keep in touch with us on this story? Any more breaking news, let us know.
I certainly will, George.
Great, and have yourself a great Christmas, okay?
You too. Thank you so much.
Dr. Carmen Bolter, her website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Remarkable story. Up next, time for Angels. Get ready.